fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. American tennis star Serena Williams tops the show this evening. And joining us now to tell us why is my Voice of America colleague, Gwen Uten. Happy Friday, Gwen.
Happy Friday, Sonny. Well, call it a comeback. Last night, Serena Williams won her first singles match of 2018 at the BNP Open in Indian Wells in California. She defeated Zarina Dias of Kazakhstan 7-5, 6-3 and advanced to the second round. After the match, Serena said she was excited to be back on the court.
I kind of was thinking about it today, and I felt like, when you're young and you first come on tour and you're excited to play and you want to play the top players to see kind of where your game is, and that's really how I felt. I just felt like, you know, I'm in this tournament and I wanted to see where I am, and I'm just excited to be here, just to be on the grounds of a tournament, to be playing, and it's really fun.
But the new mother said she was close to tears when she had to leave her six-month-old daughter to play the match.
I almost cried before the match. I don't know. I texted Alexis. I was like, is it normal that I want to cry? Because I don't know. I really missed her, but playing at night really helped because I know she goes to bed and she goes to sleep. And so I know, okay, she's asleep. I can't, like, play with her right now. So there's nothing I could do.
Serena has admitted she's a little rusty, but she's eager to return to top form.
I'm definitely much better than I was for Melbourne. I was thinking from zero to Serena, I'm probably just with the S. I got a little ways to go. but I'll get there. And I, you know, like I said, it's a journey for me. I'm not going to get there instantly. And, you know, I'm just going to go for it.
And she says one day she will put down her racket and retire from the sport, but not just yet.
I definitely think it's a case of waking up and saying, I don't feel like doing this. I don't want to go out there, or I want to spend more time with Olympia. So I don't know. I always said one day I'll know, and that hasn't happened yet.
A big, big thank you to Craig Gabriel for providing that audio. Ahead of last night's match, Serena wrote on her Instagram page and said, in part, it's official, my comeback is here. This Thursday, I will start playing tennis again professionally for the first time since giving birth to my daughter. This whole month, I am playing tournaments in California and Florida, both my home states. Thursday, the day I play my first match, marks International Women's Day. My comeback could not have come on a better day. Thanks for the support. I look forward to seeing you out there. Followers on Serena's Instagram and Twitter page expressed their enthusiasm about seeing Serena back on the court. One wrote, "She's back and ready to retake her throne." And another said this, "It will be so good to see you back on the court competing. I have waited for this day to come, and I am stoked. You rock, Serena, greatest of all time." Serena will try to become the first woman to win three singles titles at Indian Wells. She won her first in 1999. Then she won in 2001. But during that tournament, she and her family claimed they were subjected to racial slurs and were accused of match fixing. After winning the tournament, Serena boycotted the event for 14 years. In 2015, Serena wrote an article for Time magazine and announced she would be returning to Indian Wells, writing, "Indian Wells was a pivotal moment of my story, and I am a part of the tournament story as well." She later stepped onto the court and received a standing ovation. This year, Serena is in the same quarter of the draw as her older sister, Venus. So, Sonny, the two of them could face each other in the third round. That's always an exciting match to watch. The Williams sisters! Back over to you, Sonny. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Gwen. And you have a good weekend, too. I love watching the Williams sisters play each other. I know they've had some epic matches over the years. Venus and Serena still going at it in 2018. And thanks again to my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Joining us now from Abuja, Nigeria, with more sports news is reporter Samson Omale. Coincidentally, just like my colleague Gwen Uten, Samson wants to talk about Serena Williams. Good evening, Samson.
Good evening to you, Sonny. A comment by American tennis star Serena Williams expressing her desire to launch a top tennis tournament in Africa, particularly in Kenya, has excited Kenyans on Twitter. Williams made a remark during an interview where her opinion was sought on having a tennis event in Africa to help grow the sport on the continent. She confirmed that it was actually something she has been thinking of for a while and will one day in the future realize that dream. In football news, some of Africa's top football executives are throwing their weight behind the Morocco 2026 FIFA World Cup bid for hosting rights. Ghana FA President and first Vice President of the Confederation of African Football, Kwesi Nyatake, believes it should be the turn of Africa to host the FIFA World Cup in 2026.
There are two bids, Morocco, then the joint one from US, Canada and Mexico. But we from Africa have not hidden our support for Morocco. And I hope that we support Morocco to win the bid.
I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thanks, Samson, and have a nice weekend. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. In 2018 World Cup football news, the Atlas Lions of Morocco will prepare for June's big tournament in Russia, with friendly matches later this month against Serbia and Uzbekistan. The Royal Moroccan Football Federation says the Atlas Lions will play Serbia March 23rd in Turin, Italy, and then host Uzbekistan in Casablanca 4 days later. The Royal Moroccan Football Federation is also working on lining up more friendly warm-up matches ahead of Morocco's opening World Cup match, June 15th against Iran in St. Petersburg, Russia. Morocco will then meet reigning European champion Portugal on June 20th in Moscow before wrapping up group play against 2010 World Cup champion Spain on June 25th in Kaliningrad, Russia. The Atlas Lions of Morocco, led by French head coach Hervé Renard, last appeared at the World Cup in 1998 in France. Meanwhile, World Cup-bound Senegal will also play a friendly warm-up match against Uzbekistan in Morocco on March 23rd, and then the Senegalese will play another friendly against Bosnia and Herzegovina 4 days later on March 27th in France. Senegal's head coach, Aliou Cisse, has named Crystal Palace defender Pape Souare to his 30-man squad for the friendly matches. The 27-year-old Souare suffered a life-threatening car crash in 2016. The defender has made a full recovery from the crash in London, where he had to be airlifted to a hospital by paramedics. Souare broke his jaw and thigh bone in the accident, and he's thrilled to be back on Senegal's national football team, nicknamed the Lions of Teranga. Souare tweeted, and I quote, "I'm delighted to be called up to the national team. It's been a while since I've been able to represent my country, but I'm back now, and I can't wait to be back on the pitch." Senegal has also lined up World Cup warm-up matches against Luxembourg in May and Croatia in June. The Senegalese will kick off their World Cup campaign against Poland on June 19th in Moscow. Then Senegal will go against Japan on June 24th, and wrap up World Cup group play against Colombia on June 28th. This is the second World Cup appearance for Senegal. I'm guessing a few of our VOA listeners remember that debut by the Lions of Teranga way back in Asia in 2002 when the Lions of Teranga made it to the quarterfinals at Japan, South Korea, 2002. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Russian doping and a Los Angeles Lakers basketball star were both in the spotlight at this week's 90th Academy Awards. Joining us now with that story, as well as other sports news, is my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson.
And now, the Oscar for Best Animated Short Film. The envelope, please. And the winner is... Dear Basketball, National Basketball Association great Kobe Bryant.
I feel better than winning a championship, to be honest with you.
The former Los Angeles Lakers basketball star won an Oscar in the animated short film based on a poem he wrote after ending his 20-year career on the court in 2016.
What are you going to do when you retire? And I'd say, well, I want to be a writer. I want to be a storyteller. And I got a lot of, yeah, that's cute. That's cute. You'll be depressed when your career is over and you'll come back to play, you know. And I got that a lot. And so to be here right now and to have like a sense of validation is, dude, this is crazy, man.
Kobe Bryant will add his Oscar to an already jammed trophy collection, which includes 5 NBA championships with the Lakers, 2 Olympic gold medals, NBA Finals Most Valuable Player awards, a league MVP award, and 4 All-Star Game MVP awards.
All of it put me out of my comfort zone.
Bryant shared the award with Disney animator Glenn Keane, but it was at home where he found his inspiration.
My little 11-year-old Gianna goes, well, Dad, you always tell us to go after our dreams, so man up.
Film, writing, and speech are all powerful tools to convey ideas and feelings. Kobe Bryant says they're for everyone to use.
Whether you're a professional athlete or not, whether you're an actor or not, you still have the ability to speak up for what it is that you believe in. And as well as people have the right to criticize that. I mean, this is the democracy that we live in. That's what makes America beautiful.
Sports intersected with this year's top awards for film not once, but twice.
I was thinking that it would start, I ask you questions, and you answer yes or no. Were you the mastermind that cheated the Olympics?
Yes.
The Netflix original film Icarus, an expose of Russia's state-sponsored Olympic doping program, won the Oscar for Best Documentary. Director Brian Fogel spoke after the Academy Awards ceremony.
I wanted to acknowledge that in this moment of happiness and winning this war, there are real-world stakes, and there is a human life at stake, and there are clean athletes who have been cheated, and there is a Russian government that continues to not deny all facts and all proof while they hunt the man who literally brought this information forward. And so to win this award and not acknowledge all that didn't feel appropriate.
Fogel's primary source for the documentary was former head of Russia's anti-doping lab, Grigory Mikhailovich Rodchenkov. Since going public with his accusations, Rodchenkov has moved to the United States out of fear for his life.
I need to escape. Putin will kill me.
Be very careful what was your recording.
No Country for Old Men. Grumpy old men. Hollywood has produced many films about old men. So how about a comeback movie about 47-year-old golf great Phil Mickelson? Well, he's not really that old, but he has emerged a winner after more than 4.5 years, hoisting the trophy after a playoff with fellow American Justin Thomas at the Mexico Championship, a World Golf Championships event.
This is a very meaningful win. I can't really put it into words, given the tough times of the last 4 years and the struggle to get back here and knowing that I was able to compete at this level but not doing it and the frustration that led to, and to finally break through and have this validation means a lot to me.
Mickelson felt he would break through.
I knew it was going to happen soon. I didn't know if it would be this week. I didn't know if it would be today. I had confidence it was going to happen.
The man known as Lefty had a long time to deal with his playing demons.
The frustration builds when you know you can play at a certain level and you know that you're able to win and compete, and you're not doing it.
Justin Thomas was glad to have a chance for the win.
I'm really proud of myself, how well I played, how I hung in there, how I even had a chance to win. Obviously, the playoff didn't go how I wanted, but Phil, man, I'm happy for him. I'm proud of him. He's really been working hard to get back in the winner's circle, and it was a great week for both of us.
The victory gives Mickelson confidence heading into this year's major tournaments.
I'm very optimistic and believe that this is just a stepping stone of some more good things to come. I feel like I'm starting to play some of my best golf again.
And he has a special goal.
With the Ryder Cup coming up, certainly I've made it known that one of my big goals is for us, or for me, to be a part of a winning team in Europe. It hasn't happened in my career. It would mean a tremendous amount to me to have us succeed over on European soil.
Mickelson is within striking distance of 50 career wins. How fast will he get there?
I don't know. Seven more wins and I'll be there, but I don't know. I don't have the month or the time.
Also on the comeback trail was 31-year-old South African George Kutsaya, who has moved back into the top 100 in the world rankings by winning his second Swanee Open title in Pretoria.
Really happy to have done it. I needed to kind of prove to myself after the ankle injuries that I could come back and get the win again, and I'm very happy to have done that.
Kutsaya liked how he played on the greens.
I felt like I wasn't hitting it great, but I was putting amazing, so I felt like if I could hit it even closer, I could probably make a couple birdies more.
The veteran Kutsaya helped to settle the playing nerves of 21-year-old Sam Horsfield of England, who finished second, two shots back, in his first event where he was in contention to win.
It was a great experience, you know, being in my first final group. You know, George is a great guy. You know, we got talking a little bit out there, and being in that group with someone who's really nice, you know, kind of settled me down a little bit early on.
With Kutsaya's win, South Africa now has five players in the top 100 in the world rankings.
Roger Bannister, the British one-mile record holder, lines up with five other runners for a race which ended by making history. The race was run at Oxford as part of a meeting between the Amateur Athletic Association and Oxford University.
Roger Bannister, the first runner to break the four-minute barrier in the mile, has died. He was 88.
With 250 yards to go, 25-year-old Bannister took the lead with an amazing burst of speed. He went on to achieve the world record of a mile in under 4 minutes, sought after by athletes for over 40 years.
Bannister's family said in a statement that he died peacefully in Oxford, the English city where the runner cracked the feat many had thought humanly impossible.
If you could run it in 4 minutes and 2.2 seconds, then you would find somebody else somewhere who trained a little better, had better conditions on the day, was able to use the pace judgment better, and they could do it. So that was the frame of mind in which I approached it.
Paced by two other runners, Bannister clocked 3 minutes 59.4 seconds over four laps at Oxford's Iffley Road track on May 6, 1954, on a windy afternoon.
Gradually, the weather improved a little, and I was told and knew myself that if I didn't make the attempt when I had the chance of winning, I would never forgive myself.
Bannister, who went on to pursue a long and distinguished medical career, had been slowed by Parkinson's disease in recent years.
He'd obviously used up his last ounce of energy, but what an achievement for Bannister and Britain.
And thanks to my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson, for that extra spicy sports report. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. In African boxing, former world champion Julius the Blue Machine Ndongo of Namibia faces a very difficult fight later Friday night against American Regis Progress. So says our reigning prince of pugilistics, Nnamdi Hollywood Moeta.
Sonny, this fight is going to happen March 9th in South Dakota. You know, so what are they doing in South Dakota? Why South Dakota? Who's there to watch the fight? But it's a television fight, so the casino puts up the money, so they get the fight. This is a crossroads fight for Ndongo, coming off a brutal knockout by Crawford in August. Taking on an American who is 20-0 with 17 knockouts. It's a very, very, very tough fight for Ndongo, Sonny.
Dangerous fight, it sure sounds like, Namdi. But also interesting that Lou DiBella is basically promoting both fighters. What's that all about?
Well, this is a situation where the American promoter signs the African, puts him in there with his best fighter who's backed with an American television money. You wonder why he made this move. But you don't blame the American promoter. You blame the African and his team that went to the American promoter, because basically they're going to use the African to build up this young, tough American tiger who will win the fight on television. Ndongo has to do more to win the fight, but if he cannot knock out Progress, I don't think Ndongo will win the fight. And moreover, this fight is for the WBC Interim Super Lightweight belt. This was one of the belts left by Terence Crawford.
Julius Ndongo also involved in a fight outside the ring, Namdi, his former manager, filing a lawsuit. VOA! Tell our VOA listeners about that.
Well, his former manager, Nestor Tobias, manager promoter, said he still has a valid boxing contract, promoter's contract with the Blue Machine Ndongo. He has hired a very, very powerful boxing attorney in America to take on these people that stole his fighter from him. And I think this may be a big distraction for Ndongo, because Nestor Tobias wants to be paid from this fight March 9th. And if he has a valid contract, the boxing commission will honor his contract and put the money in escrow, and everybody will be in deep trouble.
Thanks, Namdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moeta. And we'll hear more hard-hitting boxing commentary from Namdi in the days to come, right here on the Sunny Side of Sports. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and I encourage our VOA listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. Once again, that Twitter handle, @VOA Sunny Sports. If you go to my Facebook page, you'll see an action photo of Carly Lloyd, the American women's soccer star. The photo was taken by Phelan Ebenhack, and Phelan works for the Associated Press. I gave a shout-out to Carly Lloyd on Thursday's show. The two-time Women's FIFA Player of the Year played in her 250th match on Wednesday evening in Orlando, Florida. That's where the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team beat England 1-0 to lift the She Believes Cup for the second time in 3 years. I like that name, the She Believes Cup. And the Americans lifted that She Believes Cup on the eve of International Women's Day. Pretty fitting name for that tournament, the She Believes Cup, twinning nicely with International Women's Day. In National Basketball Association news, former NBA Most Valuable Player Derrick Rose has signed with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Rose signed with the Timberwolves after a kind of a tumultuous stay with the Cleveland Cavaliers. He won the MVP award in 2011, but since then he's been hobbled by injuries. In fact, earlier this week I chatted with Mwamoyo Hoops Hamza about Derrick Rose and his mental health dealing with all those injuries. And that wraps up the March 9th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Patrick Dea. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The long reach of terrorism threatens to steal the future of countless Africans, said Secretary Rex Tillerson in a recent speech. In the last year alone, thousands of Africans have died at the hands of terrorists. In response to this growing threat, the United States sanctioned 7 ISIS-affiliated groups, including ISIS West Africa and ISIS Somalia, and their leaders, in an effort to cut off the resources that these groups use to carry out attacks. To prevail against such evil forces, said Secretary Tillerson, the United States has committed to working with African partners to rid the continent and the world of terrorism by addressing the drivers of conflict that lead to radicalization and recruitment in the first place, and building the institutional law enforcement capacity of African nations. Terrorism knows no borders. In the Sahel and the Lake Chad Basin, Boko Haram, ISIS West Africa, Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb, and other groups are adaptable, they're resilient, and capable of launching attacks throughout the area, noted Secretary Tillerson. Regional cooperation is crucial to disrupting those attacks and denying these terrorist organizations the capability to plan and carry out attacks in the future. The nations of Burkina Faso, Chad, Mali, Mauritania, and Niger, also known as the G5 Sahel, are pooling their expertise and resources to fight terrorism. To support their efforts, the United States has committed $60 million in security assistance to enable G5 Sahel countries to counter terrorism across the region. In addition, for more than a decade, the United States has supported the Trans-Sahara Counterterrorism Partnership to provide training and promote cooperation between military, law enforcement, and civil actors across North and West Africa. In East Africa, the United States has used the Partnership for Regional East Africa Counterterrorism since 2009 to do the same. The Counterterrorism Partnership Fund is another important resource that helps African partners build their capacity to counter terrorism. Since 2016, the United States has contributed more than $140 million to help partners prevent terrorist safe havens and the recruitment through these partnerships. The United States also provides the African Union mission in Somalia with training, equipment, mentorship, unarmed aerial surveillance, and operational support to enable African nations to fight terrorism in Somalia. There are no quick fixes to the terrorist threat, but the United States is committed to meeting the challenge head-on in partnership with African countries so the continent ultimately can become a place of prosperity, freedom, and safety.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA News.
When news breaks, VOA News is there.
Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.